I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. We are back. The NFL is back. Training camp is back in full effect. I'm not at a training camp. I'm at home, and it feels really good to be on this side of the ball game, Tyler. I can't wait to dive in this year. We kicked things off last year about midway through, middle end of the season, and now we get to start this thing at the very beginning. How are you? Are you excited? What are you looking forward to? Tell me, talk to me, talk dirty. Let's go.
Well, I'm just sitting here and we're going to talk about it. I'm waiting for that Jordan Love contract extension to hit. We'll see where it shakes out. I'm seeing maybe the top paid quarterback in the NFL. Maybe we come in, you know, I'm hoping maybe it's like a $50 million a year, a little below that Trevor Lawrence mark. Regardless, we'll talk about that when we get to it.
He deserves more. But yes.
I mean, as a fan, you have to hope, like, you don't want to pay your quarterback a ridiculous amount of money, but that's also just how the NFL works, where if you have a guy who you like, and the Discord has actually been really interesting. Mm-hmm. The discourse has been really interesting about Jordan Love, where I've started to see people come out of the woodwork where they're like, wait, are we sure that we should be giving him $55, $60 million a year? It was only half of a good year that he had, which I frankly think is kind of ridiculous. Let's also say that's loser talk.
Let's also say that half of a good year. How about the last 10 games he's played in, he was the top five quarterback in the league, one of them. It wasn't like he just had a half of a good year. And the beginning part of the good year, he was doing all the same shit. His guys around him weren't ready. They're back. The band is back. And if they don't pay him what he needs to get now, they're going to have to pay more next year. He's going to have a good year. And I think the other thing to think about, like, everybody was freaking out a couple of years ago when Aaron Rodgers was getting, what, $40 million
a year? Yeah.
Right? $40 million a year for 3 or 4 years. And it was like the number one quarterback. But like next year, bro, someone's going to get 65. The year after that, someone's going to get 70, 75. Like, you got to think about what the, you know, today's value of a dollar versus tomorrow's and the next year and the next year. Get him locked in now. Get him a nice long deal. Make him your guy. Make him feel comfortable and loved. He's going to play his ass off this year. And then you're not going to have to pay him next year. And it's going to be a better deal next year than it is this year. It's okay. And also, you guys are fine.
And we're going to talk about the Cowboys here in a second, because they have the nightmare situation in terms of contracts. But in terms of the Packers, you have your core skill position guys that are the wide receivers are under really cheap rookie deals. Josh Jacobs is basically on like this 1 year, you can get rid of him next year deal. If you have to put a little money to lock in your best player, and then you can kind of stagger, you know, I always like to think the cap always goes up. So, you know, Romeo Doubs,
Antonio Wicks, cap always goes up.
They all get paid in these different incremental time slots, but you got to lock in your guy right now. And at least you're not in this position where you got to pay your big three like Dallas is going to have to all at once.
Totally, dude. Dallas fucked up. Like, you have to think of it this way, like cap room, salary, all that stuff, it increases year over year. Lock in your quarterback first, get that one done the earliest, and then you might have another year before you have to pay a disgruntled left tackle, a disgruntled wide receiver, maybe a DN. Like, get the quarterback done first, because that's going to be the highest ticket price. And then by year two of that deal, that price will look like a discount. So just go pay your quarterback, get them locked in, and then maybe you get guys on a franchise tag. I don't know. Everybody's got different situations, but pay your quarterback first, pay them early so that the market doesn't just keep trending and you're not on the tail end of it. I hope that they lock it in now, because look at Dak. They could have paid Dak last year and they didn't. Dak went out and balled out, and he's now going to get a massive contract. If they could have paid him 50 last year, 48, who knows what the market value was, but now they're going to have to pay him 55, 60, and that's over four more years. So, like, I don't know. It's really interesting how all this plays out, but it's a sliding scale, and the ceiling, the cap is always going up. So just go lock in your guys, man. Don't be stingy.
How do you think Tua is thinking about all this? Because he's the last quarterback of this 2020 draft class that has yet to get paid, assuming everything works out with Jordan Love. You have Joe Burrow signing that massive deal. Justin Herbert's under a massive new deal. And now Tua is playing his fifth year, still under his rookie deal, sitting around being like, what about me?
Well, I look at Tua and I'm like, dude, Tua is a product of his environment. He has good anticipation. He can read things out. He's pretty sharp. Like, he can play the game, but he's, you know, a lot of locking in your quarterback is so nobody else gets to lock them in. And now that all these other spots are kind of getting taken up, like, what's the risk of not paying him? Like, where is he going to walk? You know, can he walk somewhere? Well, there's less places to walk that are going to be QB needy. And I just think that the Dolphins, with how their roster is built, they saw where they faltered at in the playoffs. They saw what was obviously holding them back. And I think it's very similar to Brock Purdy. Like, Brock Purdy played his ass off, and he's like, I look at Brock Purdy as a better quarterback than Tua. Like, hands down, I would take Brock 10 out of 10 times over Tua. And Brock also is still a benefit of the system that he's in. So where does he land? If Jordan Love's going to get 55, does Brock get 48, 45, whatever? I know that Tua shouldn't get 55 or 60. Like, that's for damn sure. Because Tua, if you remove the pieces from the puzzle, he doesn't look the same. And then there's guys like Jordan Love who elevate the guys around him. Like, it's just, there's a lot of different pieces that go into this. And if I'm Tua, I'm like, damn, I probably should have locked something in when I had the chance, and I should have probably taken a little bit less money if they had already offered it to me. Because now it's like, do they have to pay me 55 if they know I can't go anywhere? Like, what are you going to do? Hold out? You're not going to hold out when, like, that's the roster. That's the offense. That's how you lose your job and make no money. So it's like, I don't think that Tua has as much leverage as he may have originally had.
Yeah, that's the issue. And I can't think of an example where a quarterback coming off of his rookie deal that has had the success, the regular season success that Tua, or you throw in Brock Purdy, where they willingly take less than the top guy of the market. Like, I can't think off the top of my head an example like that. The examples I can think of where you get quarterbacks on quote unquote reasonable deals are like the Baker Mayfields of the world, where you have to go, basically you tank with two teams for two different seasons. And then you come back and you're like, okay, I'll sign a $33 million deal or something a bit more reasonable. But it's like,
hear me out. Who would you rather have? Baker Mayfield for how much was his contract?
I think it's like 3 years, $100 million. So I think it works out to be about 30, okay. $33 million a year.
Who would you rather have? Baker Mayfield for $33 million a year or Tua for $55 million a year?
Yeah, no doubt.
Give me Baker 20 out of 20. I would take Baker probably for the same amount every year. I think Baker played quarterback better than Tua did given the situation he was in. I think if Baker were to go to Miami, he'd have a freaking phenomenal year. And so I also think that when you get into this quarterback market a little bit, you're looking at, okay, what spots are available right now? Like, who could, if Tua decide, like, if something happened, right, and they didn't have him, where could he go? Where would he go and have success? One. And two, like, okay, if they don't sign him, this is his fifth year, correct?
Yeah.
So he's technically a full free agent next year. He could get injured this year, and then he's, like, starting from ground zero. Also, you have guys like Kirk Cousins, who their contracts are super weird, and maybe Kirk Cousins ends up in Miami next year. You know what I mean? He's throwing a Tyreek and those guys, like, you just don't know how the NFL is going to work out. And I think to lock up a guy like Tua at the price that people believe he's going to get ended up at, it's like, that just sounds like bad business to me. And I don't know, maybe I'm naive or something, but if I'm just comparing apples to apples, like, I'd rather have Kirk Cousins this year than Tua on the same exact team, given everything we know. I'd rather have Baker Mayfield than Tua on the same exact team. Like, it's not like Tua is necessarily the reason they go. He has made some big plays and had some big games, but like he's just operating in the system. And there are other guys that can operate in the system equal or slightly less to for a lot less money.
Yeah, that Brock Purdy discourse whenever he's up for his extension is going to be, I'm just going to feed families in the offseason as we debate tirelessly whether or not we should give Brock Purdy. I was doing a graphic in preparation of Jordan Love signing his new contract just to see the percent of the cap that each quarterback takes up for their team. And so on the high end, you have quarterbacks like Joe Burrow that are taking up almost a quarter of his team's cap this year on his own. And then all the way at the bottom, you have Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, taking up something like less than half of a percent of the team's salary cap, which obviously plays into team construction. Yeah. And it's the reason that the 49ers can have all of these bona fide superstars because Brock Purdy's making so little money. But the discourse around how much money he deserves, same with this Tua conversation, I think is going to be on steroids. So we mentioned him earlier. I just mentioned him talking about the cap hit. Joe Burrow comes back with a new haircut.
Yeah.
We did a break, or you did a breakdown of Joe Burrow from, I think you looked at his 2022 tape because he was out for most of last season. What do you expect?
It was some of the 23. It was some of 23, but it was only a handful of games.
And we didn't see a lot of him last year. And I feel like a lot of people sort of forget about where he falls in this young quarterback ranking, quite frankly. What do you expect out of him and the Bengals this year?
I think that they're going to be so dependent on how healthy they can be. And I know that's like football talk, but like them specifically, they they need a lot of things to go right, in my opinion, to handle that division. Meaning, I don't think they have a lot of depth. I don't think that they have a lot of pieces that could be removed and them still be a championship caliber team. The way that I look at it, like, it's a deep playoff run or bust for the Bengals, and they're only going to be going downhill if they cannot make a deep playoff run. Now, Joe Burrow, the way he plays the game, dude, he's got ice in his veins. Like, he's sharp, he's accurate, he's able to scramble to create plays. He's always looking to throw the ball downfield, even when he's scrambling. He is like the modern day quarterback. He's not necessarily a Lamar Jackson, but neither is Patrick Mahomes. Like, they play very similarly and how they want to operate. But dude, that AFC North, dude, is tough. Like, you have to play the Ravens twice a year. You have to play the Browns defense twice a year. You have to play the Steelers defense twice a year. Those are six games that are really hard to manage through to be healthy and win. It just is what it is. That division is going to beat itself up all year. And I just, this is one of those things where I'm looking at Joe Burrow's contract and I'm like, I think they overpaid now. In a couple of years, they won't be as overpaid, but he's still in the upper scale of that. And he's going to be the reason why they can't get a few more of those extra pieces to come and win a championship. I don't think the Bengals are ever going to repeat. Like, I don't think I see it. You have a Mahomes and an Andy Reid that's going to be there for a very long time. You have to get through them. You have to get through your division. And you're working against yourself in the cap. So, I don't know. I look at the Bengals and I'm like, they'll be a fun team to watch. They're going to win a lot of games. They're going to have some tough games, some good games, whatever. But, yeah, watching it, I don't know. A guy like Joe Burrow should be a guy that's taking a Tom Brady-type contract. That's the clip.
So, Jordan Love is also working through similar things. I think the interesting part of what he's doing is he's at practice, but he's not practicing. He's doing what I think they're calling a hold-in. Yeah. What do you assume that dynamic is like with him being there but not practicing? Obviously, he seems like he wants to re-sign with the team. They're going to figure it out, but it's just kind of a weird situation, or is it not that weird?
It's not weird because it's like, hey, it's the same as saying, like, if someone approaches you for a marketing deal, hey, just you got to talk to my reps. Like, this is contract based. This is not my want to based. So they just got to go handle business. And then I can get back on the field, and I can't wait to get back on the field. That's the gist of it. Team knows it. Players know it. Jordan knows it. He's still there for meetings, but the only thing that could absolutely ruin all of it is if he were to have a random, knock on wood, injury or anything. And then he's out $50+ million a year, right? Because then it's delayed. And then it's like, you just can't risk it. So the risk reward for a couple of practices and training camp this early, it's not worth anything. So, I think he's doing the responsible thing by doing a hold in.
Yes. And when Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love are standing next to each other on the field, I'm sure they're not even broaching the topic of, hey, is it 52 million? Is it 55 million? Like, that's not even in their vernacular.
No. And I would imagine Matt's probably just annoyed that the front office hasn't gotten it done yet. He just wants to, like, the head coach wants to focus on the ball. He wants to focus on ball. He wants to get his guys on the field. And he wants to start getting his game plans together, get the things that they need to work on together that are specific to Jordan and the players that'll be on the field with him. And they can't do that yet. So I'd imagine Matt is just as much as anybody else. Like, can we get this thing done already? Like, can you know what I mean? Pay him his money, whatever. So that's kind of how I'd imagine that dynamic's playing out right now.
That's why I've never understood why Lamar Jackson is the example that comes to mind, represents himself. Because I imagine, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, that when you're in those negotiations, it's helpful to have representation because you don't want your team talking about, I think you're not worth this amount.
Yeah.
I think you're worth less because of these reasons. And your representation acts as a pass-through where you're not receiving that sort of criticism and valuation right to your face. And it seems like that, like, Lamar Jackson has always seemed to have this strenuous relationship with the Ravens, partially because of that reason, I assume.
Well, he's got to be the bad guy. And as a player, in my opinion, you don't necessarily want to be the bad guy. You just want to be the player. And I do think that if I was Lamar, I would have taken an agent that would take a lower cut. Like, you're going to make a lot of money. Take a 1% guy. Maybe you can negotiate down to 0.5%. I mean, at the end of the day, I think in any negotiation like that, that is also as the leader of the team, it just makes it hard. And then you find out about people that you don't necessarily need to know anything about or find out about, or like what they think of you. You know what I mean? Like, it just takes away from the main thing, which this sport, like, the main thing is winning games. And if you don't win games, everyone loses their jobs. So Yeah, at the end of the day, I think it is nice to have a buffer in between that things can pass through, regardless of the percentage that it costs to do it. I mean, in any marketing world in general, like, you don't want to be negotiating all of your deals for yourself. Like, you want to be focused on what you're best at. And that's my take on it.
Yeah. Give me an idea of what Jordan Love is. I'm assuming he wants to be playing and he wants to be practicing with his team right now. When training camp starts, like it has this week, is it like a first day of school type feeling, or is it like first day back at work type feeling after, you know, like a Christmas break or something like that?
It's first day of school, 100%. And it's like, you do all the annoying shit all day long. You go to meetings, you have to work out, you have more meetings, you watch film. And now Jordan's got to go after practice to watch more film of the backups versus film of himself as he's trying to get better for the season. And it's like, you do all the annoying things without the reward of getting to sling the ball around at practice. Like, that's fun as a quarterback. And so, yeah, I'd imagine that he's just like, he's done with it. He's probably ready to play ball and get to work, because again, season's going to be approaching quickly and they got Philly week one, right? So, yeah. And that's the foreign game. So they got a big one like that. There's just something about the season when you start 0-1, that's like, fuck, man. What if we start 0-2? Then we're really like, you know what I mean? Like 0-1 turns to 0-2 quickly and every team's got a chance to win the games. It's not like nobody's a slap or rollover. So it's just, you want to be as prepared as possible and every day counts.
Yeah. Diana Rossini report today. We're recording on Thursday, July 25th, that it might take a couple of weeks for this to get sorted out. I think Packer fans are hoping that it does not take that long, but I think there's not a real sense of worry among the fan base that something's not going to get worked out. It's more of a matter of, okay, let's not let this go 3 weeks. Maybe it can go a week and we can get things sorted out. A team that I think might be feeling a little bit worried out west are the 49ers, who now not only have Brandon Ayuk, who has publicly requested a trade, has been up to some curious things on Instagram, posting Jaden Daniels film. He's been linked to other teams like the Steelers. And now you have Trent Williams also holding out. We talked about how Brock Purdy's low contract number allows them to sign these superstars, but now it's time to pay your superstars. How worried are you if you're a 49ers fan, Kurt?
If I'm a 49ers fan, I'm definitely feeling like a house of cards a little bit. However, if I'm Shanahan, I'm also just like, all right, everyone always says we have all these superstars. This is what we need. Fuck that. Like, let's go plug in guys into our system and go show that this is not so much like we need everybody as much as it's the guys that are in the building bought in. And I look at, like, my thought of this is Trent Williams is a cornerstone of that team. You need to pay Trent Williams. Brandon Ayuk has asked to be traded. Go fucking trade him. That culture of that team they're not going to do well with guys that don't want to be there. Not when you have a guy like Fred Warner on the defense that's laying on the line every single game all the time. And like, it felt more like a college brotherhood on that team when I was there than an NFL team, but with NFL perks of guys that really give a shit and everyone that's bought in. If you are not a guy that's bought in, it's going to be tough sledding. And again, Brandon Ayuk has been a baller for them last few years, but to publicly state that you want to leave, let him leave. Like, I just think that does something for the locker room to where, like, you don't want guys in the locker room to feel like anybody is too big to not have to like buy in. And if you're going to go request a trade, you're obviously not bought in. You don't want to be there. And you might not want to be there because they don't want to pay you what you think you're worth, which is totally fine. But there's already like a severed relationship. They need to just go trade him, pay Trent Williams, and have one of their young guys step up. Like, it is what it is. And not to mention, Brock Purdy is going into year three now. He should be better. Like, everyone has another year in the system. They should be even better. They've been through more adversity. They should all be better. Everyone should be a little bit better this year. Some of the old guys, all you got to do is hang on, because you have young guys that you've been grooming and teaching and they've been in practice and stuff. So like, do you believe in yourself or do you not? Because if you do believe in yourself as an organization, as a coach, then you should only want guys that want to be there. And nobody should be needed bad enough that if they don't want to be there, that you're trying to make them stay or convince them to stay. That's my opinion.
I can imagine, you described it as a brotherhood, that you're feeling like you're walking on eggshells then if there's a guy that clearly doesn't want to be there. Like, it severs that kind of force that it sounds like you're describing around the team.
Yeah, dude, it does. Like, look, Brandon Ayuk clearly wants to go play for the Commanders. Go fucking trade him to the Commanders. Get your picks for him. Get your whatever you want for him. Maybe get a player for him. Let him go be happy. you go get something in return versus having to crush this cap thing that you've got to go up against with Trent Williams that's going to definitely get paid. And Brock Purdy's, he's due. He's been to one Super Bowl and two NFC Championship games, and he's only going into year three. So, like, unless you believe that Brandon Ayuk is so instrumental to your offense, well, then you should pay him like that. But if you're not willing to do that, you can't have your cake and eat it too. So trade the man, get the picks, trust that you've drafted or traded for or whatever for some of these young guys to step up and go see what's what. Like, that's normal business in the NFL. That's what normal teams have to do. I don't know why the 49ers right now feel like they have the right to keep everybody there and pay everybody even if they don't want to be there. Like, it's just a weird, I don't know, man. If I'm a boss, which in some of my own rights I am, if someone wants to leave, leave. Please. We'll make it work. Like, I don't know. It just seems so weird to me, dynamic wise, and especially with all the social media stuff. Like, I'd love to go see Brandon Ayuk ball out with the Commanders with Jaden Daniels and have a blast. Like, that's good. Like, you're gonna essentially keep a player against his will because also you won't pay him like he's due. I don't know. It's just weird. Yeah.
Do you think it's telling in a sense, though? You talked about how he's been great for the 49ers. Maybe there's a part of them that doesn't want to give him up because there's not a guy that they trust behind him. They think that he's a valuable part of this offense, and that value supersedes him holding out and him making things a little awkward and tense in the locker room. Yeah. Like, it seems to me like they're showing their cards a little bit if they're not trading him. You're right. Like,
yeah, you're right. Like, we tried to get you for $20 million a year, but you're worth 30. So, like, you got us. You know what I mean? Like, that's the shit that I'm like, it just doesn't, it's bad business in my opinion. Either you value him and you pay him, or you don't and you trade him. You, like, you're like reverse negotiating by holding him hostage in a sense and making him, and this is the thing. This sport is not black and white. This is a very gray sport. There's a lot of things that go on. There's a lot of, like, relationships, and there's, like, energy that gets put into this. Like, it's like they're trying to play money ball, but they're talking about superstars here. They're not getting, like, you know, they're not getting middle of the road guys that they're trying to play money ball with. Like, you're trying to play money ball with a superstar who's the only reason why, not the only reason, but he's one of the main reasons why you even had a chance to go to the Super Bowl, because of some of the plays that he made. Like, so I don't know, man. It feels to me, this is what I'm going to say. Right now, this offseason for the 49ers very much feels like a kid that's gotten his way with everything he wants. He's gotten all the toys he wants, and now it's come time to pay for them all. And he doesn't want to pay for them, but he wants his toys. I want to keep my toys. Like, that's what the 49ers feel like. Like, you have to either pay for them or let them go. Like, rent is due. So pay up or let people walk, trade them.
Yeah, this kind of stuff happens in the NFL all the time. I just think back to the Aaron Rodgers getting traded to the Jets thing. Aaron Rodgers came out without any leverage, still under contract, saying, I would like to get traded to the New York Jets. And so now that puts the Packers in a presumably zero leverage situation where they have to trade him to the Jets or keep him, and he's expensive and he doesn't actually want to be there in the first place. And they still worked it out, and everybody thought that the Packers got a pretty good deal. And the reason they were so comfortable doing that, like, they felt like they had additional leverage, was because they had Jordan Love behind him, and they thought, this is our guy, we're moving forward. It just says to me that maybe the 49ers are not as confident in some of these skill position guys that would fill in behind Ayuk. And for that reason, they don't want to get rid of him. To the Aaron Rodgers point, moving over to the New York Jets, Hassan Reddick is holding out. We should just title this episode the holdout episode.
Yep.
Because their star pass rusher, who they paid a bit of money for this offseason, is also not showing up to camp. I think a couple months ago or a month ago during the mini camp that Aaron Rodgers was also not attending because he was in Egypt, Hassan Reddick was posting about being in Japan and has still decided not to show up. Is there an impact on a locker room? And the Jets locker room is maybe the best example of this, where your veteran guys that are supposed to be there reset the culture. You've been a horrible franchise for decades. You get these guys in to change the tone, change the tenor, and then all of a sudden they're not even showing up. Like, what does that do to a locker room this time of year?
Yeah, I think OTAs, I'm so against OTAs in general, and it's such a logistical nightmare for players and their families. Like, when you talk about the personal, like, component of OTAs, it's terrible. However, training camp for me is like, all right, it's time to get to work. So if you're going to hold out in training, like, nothing should take all the way up until training camp to get done. Like, every front office included, like, unless somebody was not made aware of this, that this type of thing was coming up in OTAs or earlier in the year, like, things should not take all the way to this point in time where the focus is getting better to win games, because we're going to blink and then we're going to be at the end of August and then we're going to be in September and we're going to be week one, week two, week three, and teams are going to be 1-2, 3-0. Like, and we're going to be kind of shocked at how things are going. And a lot of the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season are how your training camp went and how ready your team is to go. And so with that being said, though, I do think that a D end can just show up and play football. I don't think that a quarterback can just show up and play football. I think training camps are way more important for them at the quarterback position than they are for D ends. However, like, with a D end, you need to make sure you're in football shape. You need to make sure that you're, like, knocking the rust off. So, like, I'd imagine, again, we're a few days into training camp. We're still in July, dude. Like, training camp, even a couple of years ago, didn't start until August. So, like, we're talking about fictional times of the year that did not exist once upon a time. You got to remember, there was a COVID year where we didn't even do any OTAs, barely had training camp, rolled into the season, and people were fine. So, I think all of that needs to be taken into context. But outside of just holding out from things, like, the NFL, the way it works, a lot of people don't live in the cities they play football in. So it is like a remote work job in a sense. You just have to travel and you're there for 4 or 5, 6 months. So just keep that in mind.
Can you explain your point a little bit more about you not liking OTAs? I know it's sort of a departure from this conversation, but I am curious. You're kind of expected to parachute into Green Bay for a couple weeks in the middle of the summer. Like, what makes that such a nightmare?
So, for instance, say you are, I'll give my experience. So, practice squad guy, had a house where we lived in Florida. You know, you don't get paid in the off season. You're paying for all of your life, typically, unless you have outside ventures, with what you made from the season. And then in hopes of next season, making the team, making enough money to then push yourself a little bit further in life, right? So when you live in a place that's your home, and then you have to go to a place like Green Bay, and you live in a hotel from end of April all the way through middle of June. So April, May, June, you have 10 to 12 weeks of OTAs, making barely enough money to cover, like, rent there, because you also have to pay rent there if you're going to live there, or they'll put you up in a hotel room for 12 weeks, which, okay, like, as a family, like, I'm not going to make my family live in a hotel for 3 months. Like, so logistically, what they pay you versus, like, off-season pay is just being one of the guys versus one of the main guys. It's like not even enough, like, it doesn't move the needle at all. So you're basically not getting paid for the off-season and having to pay rent. Like, it's a wash, all in hopes that these 3 months are going to build up into a season that you can then go get paid. And so then you go from OTAs for those 12 weeks, then you get 6 weeks off. So you're not playing football, you're not doing practices, you're not, like, I don't care how hard you train or how hard you work out, there's nothing like playing football. There's no training that imitates playing football. You have to just play football to get better at football. And there's things you can do to prep, but that ramp up period's legit. And that's why you're seeing, in my opinion, some ACLs that are happening in week one right now. Training camp, you're expected to hit the ground running as if OTAs, you didn't take 6 weeks off. Take 6 weeks off of anything in life, and you're going to feel a little bit differently, regardless of what your training looks like. You're not playing football, so it is what it is. So logistically, you go and live somewhere for 3 months, then you leave to go back to wherever you were for 6 weeks, and then you re-drop back into wherever you were supposed to stay now, maybe for a month if you get cut, or maybe you're there until January, maybe February, who knows? So logistically, if you're just talking about humans, not NFL athletes, but the humans, and where they're living, where they have to pay rents, where they have to have their licenses, where they have to, like, it's a lot of back and forth and unknown, which is, that's a part of the territory. But it would just make a lot more sense if, hey, the season's done in February, we're not going to have anything that you report back to until maybe July, early July. And then from all of the month of July, you're going to have a 4 week training period to get ready for training camp with us. And then training camp starts through August, and then the season. So right now, people, in my mind, you give 3 weeks more of time right now to gain 9 weeks more up front, and you really give yourself a chance to ramp up, because I don't give a shit what anybody says about the ramp up period in training camp. You're hitting the ground relatively hot running. The season's almost here. And I'm sorry, but when you have a coach that's telling you to do this, do that, bust your ass, like, there's there's a hidden expectation of like, hey, it's now it's football season. This is not OTAs. We're not having a 2-3 week ramp up to make sure nobody gets hurt. Why do you think the Packers have had so many hamstring injuries early in the year? Like, I guarantee you didn't see many injuries coming out of OTAs because OTAs have a legitimate ramp up period. There's like, you do conditioning drills, you do like slow gaining strength training. Like you really ramp up because you have 12 weeks in the season. I mean, right now they just reported a couple days ago, they have a preseason game in what, like 10, 12 days, something like that.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's coming up quick. So that's you're going to be in pads really soon. So that's, in my opinion, why you see so many injuries in training camp in this time of the year, because you hit it super hard and then you stop for 6 weeks and you're going to be doing a little bit, but then you have to hit it even harder without a ramp up. Long story short, I don't imagine that OTAs are going to be around for much longer.
Yeah, that's interesting. You think they'll just be replaced with nothing, essentially, and you'll just get right into training camp, and maybe there'll just be a bit of ramp up built into that training camp now. That'll be the first time you're reporting.
Yeah, I believe that to be true. I also think maybe they'll just bring rookies in. Maybe they will bring rookies in right after the draft to give them a month and a half of like legitimate, this is what we're ramping you up to become to do. Because that's the other thing, as a rookie, it's really hard to go straight into training camp. OTAs were massive for rookies, but you could run OTAs with the rookies. You could do that relatively easy without, you wouldn't probably have full 11 on 11 because there's not as many guys, but you'd be able to get work done with the rookies at least for a month, then let them go and then have a longer ramp up. So that would be my thing. I saw something on Twitter about people complaining, front office people and coaches, like kind of complaining about this proposal, because in their world, the only time they get off is during this summer break to go do things with their families. Like that's been their whole schedule forever. And I'm like, this is not about the fucking coaches. Like we're going to be talking about coaches' schedules. Like this is about the fucking players. Like there's 90 players to start the season. There's 10 to 12 coaches. Like we can't be concerned about other people's schedules. Like not in that capacity. I know summer break with school and kids and all that, but like that's, come on.
That's alligator tears for one of, you know, 32 head coaches. Then I suppose you have another couple hundred supporting staff around the league,
yeah.
But I don't think that's a winning proposal when you're talking about the
also
hundreds and hundreds of players that are putting their bodies on the line.
Also the coaches typically live where they coach. So like, you know what I mean? Like the players logistically most of the time don't live where they play. So it's one of those things that I'm like, let's actually take a step back. And if this wasn't the way it was always done, would we do it this way? Fuck no, never. So it's just, that's the part of the NFL logistically that's so wild to me.
It's interesting. And I think we just often assume the top guys as fans, we often assume that the top guys, they make millions. They can have a house in Green Bay and they can have a house in LA or wherever they spend their off season. Mm-hmm. And it's no issue for them to bop back and forth on their private jet and move their family around. But
yeah,
realistically, we're only talking about 5% of guys. And totally. For the rest of, you know, guys like that in your position, Kurt, where you're always sort of between rosters or not sure if you're going to make the roster. I mean, that's the majority of the NFL.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of wasted money.
Stressful and expensive.
It's so expensive. It's a lot of wasted money. Like, it's kind of gross to think about, to be honest. But the upside, there's always that like potential upside. Maybe make a couple million-dollar deal. You know what I mean? So it's just logistically, though. I mean, it just doesn't make sense how it is now. And you're seeing injuries day one on like things that didn't happen all of OTAs. And the direct correlation, in my opinion, is there's a real ramp up in OTAs. There is not a real ramp up in training camp, and training camp has right over the horizon the season. So stakes are higher, pressure's higher. Coaches are wanting to push the envelope a little bit more. Like I promise you it would not be like this if training camp early acclimation period started in early July.
Yeah. I just listened to an interview with Will Compton and they asked him, does it ever upset you that people think that you're a multi-millionaire and set for the rest of your life because you played in the NFL for 7 years? And he's like, all the time. And you're describing now, you're like, you're living in a Holiday Inn for 3 months out of the year.
Dude,
and
what was that airport?
Money. It's like, you're not set.
What Austin Travel Airport? I stayed in that fucking hotel for 3 months. Like, it's just, and it's just like, and you got to get a rental car too. Like it's, dude, I'm just, this might be worth a clip. So just logistically talking about the NFL, When I went to San Francisco for, I was either there, I was like 10, 11, 12 weeks, something like that during the 2022 season. The amount of money that I actually netted out was like very, very little, because by the time I got there with suitcases, I had to fly my family out, had to like have them bring extra stuff because I got signed. I didn't know if I was going to make it or not. Didn't know if I was going to make the team. By the time we got all out there, got an apartment that was $5,000 a month because it was in Mountain View area and Santa Clara. Got a rental car out there that was $1,400 a month because I had to get to work, and paid taxes, did all this other stuff. Like I looked at how much I was actually clearing each month, and I was like, holy shit, that is a lot of work. And to be an NFL athlete and only clear that, it's like, it was disgusting. Like I was like, there's no way. Like people think this is something that it's not. For a lot of people, it's a lot of like, for a lot of people that are the guys, they do make a considerate amount of money. But when I was in Green Bay, I didn't have to pay California state tax. I didn't have to pay $5,000 a month for rent. Like by the time it was all said and done, like I didn't clear that much money, and especially on practice squad. So it's just, over time, it becomes a labor of love, and you're really just hoping to get the shot. That's what a lot of guys are sticking around for, hoping to get the shot to then push them over that. Oh, this could be a couple $1 million a year. Or in reality, for most people, it's not that. But that's, I think those are some of the nuances of the NFL that people don't really understand or don't look at often.
Yeah, it's so interesting. What do you suppose you're making in San Francisco when you're there drinking?
Yeah. So I wasn't there for a camp, but like during the week, I believe I was making $10,000 to $12,000 a week pre-tax. And I was there for around 3 months. I think it was like 10 or 11 weeks. I think by the time it was all said and done, my final like statement that they sent me for my taxes was like $94,000 pre-tax, pre-everything. And sure. So when I started working backwards from that, it was like, okay, you have your rent
taxes.
Basically cut in half for taxes. So let's just say between taxes, like fees, agent fees, PA, all that other random stuff. Let's just say $90,000 went to $45,000 for 3 months, which like that was fine. But then you have, $5,000 a month in rent. You have about $1,500 a month in a rental car because rental cars are expensive and you're not going to go buy a car in a state you don't live in, and you can't have your car shipped out there because you came in midseason. So let's take away maybe $18,000 from the $45,000. So now we're sitting at what? 27 ish. Maybe that's right. $18,000 off of 45. So 20 is 27, right? I think it is. So that's for being in the NFL for 3 months. And then you add in life, you add in food, you add in like family, you add in the mortgage that you're paying back somewhere else that you don't even live. Like, that's the reality of it. So it's just, it's very, and then when you get cut, you can't just break your lease. You got to pay for that whole month, even though you're not going to get paid for that whole month. So I actually had to pay 4 months of rent where I was only there for 3 months because it just overlapped by a week. And it was just like, those things are real and those things add up. And thankfully, I already had other things that I was doing outside of football to actually like pay for our life, because going to San Francisco and playing for the 49ers for 3 months, like, was not worth the financial benefit of that at all. And it's just wild, because I just don't think people realize that. It's just like any other job. You just get a cool logo and a cool helmet and like some cool clout that comes with it. But a lot of people, it is a freaking job. And that's why I stopped playing, because I was like, I'm not going to do this every year when I can go and pursue the social media side, do the media, do the breakdowns, analysis, like do all that stuff that I have full control of, when at the end of the day, because I was brought into the NFL as an undrafted guy, I'm always going to be seen as the undrafted guy. No matter how well I played in practice, it did not matter. Like, as long as...